Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Wednesday, October 17, 2007. The only October 17, 2007 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this Wednesday night. Glenn Klein Online, coming to you again from the great cheeseland of Wisconsin. See, I tell you, beautiful humans, that we make these plans according to if the Lord wills and if the creek don't rise. Well, Michael, the creek rose this week in Wisconsin.
That's what I hear.
It's been raining like the proverbial cats and dogs, and I end up spending another week in Wisconsin. Actually, I am not at the aforementioned Field of Dreams. I'm actually in Marshfield, Wisconsin, where you will be just about 1 month time from now with Pep Washburn. And we're looking forward to that meeting in Central Wisconsin.
I'm very much forward to it myself. We have a lot of friends up in that area.
We have a lot of friends in Wisconsin and Northern Illinois and all over the planet, actually. And we invite all of our friends to participate in this webcast tonight by emailing us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. We've got some great questions and comments. We have some really great questions and comments. We had a dearth of emails last week for those of you that listened to October 10th version of the webcast. But we have an abundance tonight, but we still have plenty of time to get you folks in, too. So feel free to give us a call. Excuse me, email us. We're taking up both lines tonight. So you need to email us if you want to have your voice be heard. At webcast@gospelrevolution.com, that email address is webcast@gospelrevolution.com. And we want to officially welcome in the president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams, down there in Houston, Texas. With all, speaking of showers and storms, that came right through your area, all those craziness things happening.
Well, we did have, we certainly did. I got stuck in my car for 30 minutes and just put back the seat and took a nap. And before I could even get out of my car and hear the folks in South Carolina and Georgia and Alabama, they're drinking their last cups of water up there.
Well, it's got to be a sign of the end times, Michael.
You know it is, at least in Georgia and Alabama.
Well, it might be a sign of the end times for you guys, too.
Yes, it could be, because
you never know about these things. Drink. And we're going to be talking about that momentarily, because our good friend Pat Robertson, the Most Holy Reverend and the televangelist from Virginia Beach, opened up his pie hole again the other day. And, you got to love Pat Robertson. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. The guy gives us more material, Michael, than maybe any other human being that's ever walked the face of the earth other than Jesus himself.
Are you saying he did it again?
He did it again. But before we talk about Pat, we want to talk to Pep, who is hosting not only me tonight in his lovely home here in Marshfield, Wisconsin, but is also, for the first time in 6 years, hosting Michael Williams here. What are the dates exactly on that, Pep, again?
Glenn, we are having Mike in to Marshfield, Wisconsin, on November 16th, 17th, and 18th. That's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We've got some rooms blocked aside for people that want to come into the area at special rates. And we'll repeat the email address that people can write to me at, and I can send them information on those rooms. So we're looking forward to that. We've got about a month to go, and Mike will be here.
We're going to use this as a microphone. See how that works, Pep? You can use that as a microphone. See, we're on the telephone line, ladies and gentlemen. But so, Pep, what is the email address that folks can contact you with if they'd like to come to Wisconsin to hear Mike?
Okay. Best to write to Peptoid. That's P-E-P, Toid. I'll spell it out again. P as in Peter, E Edward, P Peter, T Tom, O Ocean, I Ida, D David, at peptoid@hotmail.com.
And if you didn't get that very specific spelling of that very strange email address, Feel free to go to the gospelrevolution.com website. There is an email address there for PEP in Marshfield. It is a different one, but this is a more easily to understand one, because your other one is even stranger than Peptoid at hotmail.com.
Yeah, it is. It's actually a Native American name, Glenn.
Well, God bless the Native Americans, or the Great Spirit in the sky bless the Native Americans, and us for that matter. But one of the things that you told me at dinner tonight, Pep, was that not only do we have a good turnout that's going to be coming here in Central Wisconsin, you actually have a church, an actual physical church building, that has agreed to host Mike and to have him in for the folks.
Yeah, at this point, the Wesley United Methodist Church that's going to give us a room, and there's also another church called North Ridge Church, which is a former Assembly of God church. Now, I'm still waiting to hear, but the pastor has contacted me. He's been listening to some of Mike's CDs, and he said, it's possible I could get behind this. Well, I'm not holding my breath, but I am waiting for a phone call. I don't know if it'll be a happy phone call or not, but who knows? We'll let everybody know where we're going to be meeting.
So Mikey, you ready to go back into a Pentecostal church?
Hey, let's go. I've always said I'd go any place as long as I get to share the gospel. I really don't care.
Do you have your tongues all loosened up? Do you got your tongues all practiced?
Oh, absolutely.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, Pep, thanks a lot for hosting Mike, and thanks for hosting me tonight.
Yes.
I'm actually in Marshfield on business, ironically. This is the town that not only did I meet Pep originally in, but is the town that I lived in for 6 years. And, Michael, you actually, before you came to share the gospel with the group that Pep had 6 years ago, you actually preached here yourself back in the day.
Yes, that's what I understand. Actually, in Wisconsin, I've spoke all over that state, and there's probably more places I've forgotten than remembered, that's for sure. So it's always good to get back to Wisconsin.
There's something about the people in Wisconsin. I don't know exactly what it is. I think it has something to do with their heritage in Norway and Poland and Germany and the Scandinavia. They're just good family, just down to earth folks.
Yeah.
And
the
gospel is having its impact. A good friend of Pep's is going to be inviting a friend of hers, who's a Catholic priest, who they've had many conversations about the gospel, and the gospel, Michael, is penetrating every realm, every area of not only our society, but all over the world.
Yes, it really is. There's just been we've had years and years of just sowing seeds and seeing tremendous things happening in individual lives, and this past weekend, John, my pastor here, was teaching, and he was sharing on and more of a pastoral message about that we had entered a season of grace. And I was thinking about what he said, and I remembered what Paul had said. Paul said that God had given unto him a dispensation of grace to share the gospel. And then I remembered also in the book of Acts where they said, and great grace was upon them all. And he described that there's times when there is a tremendous flow of grace, not talking about relationship with God, the gospel that we've shared all these years, the grace that has established relationship. He was sharing about the grace that can begin to manifest itself to do really wonderful things. And in the book of Acts, the great grace was manifested, and there was mighty miracles that took place. And Paul said that his ability to share the gospel was a dispensation of grace that was given to him. But we're all just really aware of that fact, that there is now a dispensation of grace that is being manifested. And as John was saying, it's like there's an ebb and flow to the...
Hey, Mikey?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Michael, can you hear me?
Yes.
Because, are you on your cell phone?
No.
It was just breaking up really bad. Did you hear that, Patty? All right. You're about every other word was cutting out.
Okay.
Yeah, but you sound fine now. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm on a landline as well, so apparently we're having just trouble with the line. But continue.
Yes. So anyway, that's what he was speaking about, and that really did ring true in my heart, and that we really have come to a dispensation of grace that is moving really around the planet for bringing people together, the networking, and another one of the things that John had shared with us was he'd been really praying about, you know, what is church, and he really kind of settled on just one word, and it was networking, and just people in contact with people is what the church is. And I can live with that. I think that's as good of a definition as I've ever heard. And it's just the ability to network where you can support each other and to lend help and to reach out.
Well, and that dovetails nicely into a brief conversation here about the Champions of Grace that you folks could find on the GospelRevolution.com homepage. And people are responding to not only our desire to be in touch with them and for them to be champions in their area so that they could be contact people for those folks who want to have an idea of who else in their area or their region believes the gospel, but also there are folks signing up by the bushel loads to have credentials and to have ministerial licenses or 501c3, 501c3
nonprofit status.
Yeah, the status, that's the status,
right.
With the government. So when you get this kind of response this quickly, there obviously was a vacuum there that needed to be filled, and John and the Champions of Grace and you and Rick, you guys are doing that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely are, and so it really is, there's just a flood of people who have, we left kind of in our wake, I have to say, the better part of 75 or more pastors who were in full-time ministry, who, because they embraced the gospel, it really left them with nothing to do in the structures that they once were. And so those, and then, we've seen a lot of people that have raised up that weren't in any ministry at all, who just have such a passion for this gospel that they really are willing to do whatever to see people receive the gospel. And so the Champions of Grace is our way of offering support to these people in the way of licensing, ordination, and just being there for you, to be that support that people need to know that somebody's behind them, and to give that validation to where that, others who look on from outside can in the society and the world that we're in can get across that hurdle of somebody actually having the credentials or validation of being, quote, in the ministry or having a ministerial license and such.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Michael Williams, as we do each and every Wednesday night, inviting you to participate in this webcast as well by emailing us with your questions or comments. We just ask you to make them pithy and include where you're writing from so that we can include that in our conversations. Very encouraging to everybody who's listening to know that there are people all over the planet participating in the gospel, and we just love to hear from where you're writing from and also your opinion. Webcast at gospelrevolution.com is that email address. That's webcast at gospelrevolution.com. Well, Mikey, our good friend Pat Robertson, at it again. Do you think that this guy does it on purpose, or you think he's just kind of on live television, and just like when we talk on a live webcast, it's spontaneous and things come out of our mouths that maybe don't come out exactly the way we would want them to unless, we had pre-planned them or were able to edit them?
Well, who knows? Definitely know that genre of teachers, they do know that controversy brings in money, and they've been known to say that, you know, within their circles quite avowedly, and they don't really make any bones about it. They know that controversy brings in funds, and they know that there's a large community out there that are of the paradigm of the dispensationalist belief, and all they've got to do is speak up and validate that, and with the preaching of judgment, especially about Israel or something, and the money comes flooding in, like Ava Perón, you know. there's just no end to the money, no end in sight. And but it it could be spontaneous. Maybe they really do feel. Of course, you know, when you absolutely believe what you believe, you can hear God say anything, as long as it's affirming what you believe.
Ava Perón. Of all the analogies you could make to Pat Robertson.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, let's rehearse what Pat had to say on Monday.
What did he say?
Well, here's what the knucklehead from Virginia Beach, and I say that with all due respect and love, he said that the United States will risk God's wrath if it forces Israel to surrender part of Jerusalem to the Palestinian people. And this is what Robertson said. He said, he that touches Jerusalem touches the apple of God's eyes. This was, of course, the apple of God's eye. I guess that God only has one eye, by the way. This, of course, is on Pat 700 Club, which is his daily religious news and talk television program broadcast from the Christian Broadcasting Network. And he further said, if we decide we're going to wrest East Jerusalem away from the Jews and give it to the Palestinians, we're risking the wrath of God on this nation, and I think it's very dangerous. Robertson made the remarks on the heels of watching a CBN news segment about Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's meeting Monday with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Michael, Pat doesn't get it.
First of all, as
we well know, Jesus said that the prophets and the law and the Psalms were written about him. And he that touches Jerusalem touches the apple of God's eye. It comes directly from what the church calls the Old Testament writings. Michael, who was Jerusalem referring to? And who was the apple of God's eye that the Bible was referring to?
Well, if Jesus was correct, and, you know, at some measure of possibly being wrong, I would guess Jesus, since he said it was all about him, and he really proved that out during his the prophetic utterances about Jerusalem and Israel and the fulfillment of prophecy and the end of times and all of those things. He really did identify himself for us. But, our friends like Pat Robertson just have not accepted the words of Christ as to who Jesus said he was, that he was the fulfillment of all things and that he is all things. You know, he is the topic of the Scriptures. The Scriptures aren't about the future. They're about Jesus. The Scriptures aren't about anything there except about Jesus. And the manifestation of the Redeemer of this world, who has been resoundingly rejected as far as being the Savior of the world by the church. Because they certainly have added that Jesus can't be Lord unless you make him Lord, which is, by the way, making Jesus your personal Lord and Savior, there is not a line in the Bible that would even hint at such a doctrine to be taught. So no, Jesus told us through the prophets foretelling about Jesus, said that through the cross that God was going to declare peace with the entire world, and that his covenant of peace would never be removed off of the earth once the cross took place. So yeah, you know, it's kind of sad. You know, when one of the things we talked about earlier this year was another one of Pat's prophecies, and I'm sure you remember that. Do you remember his? He always gives a New Year's prophecy. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah, we always have. It's very interesting because, of course, biblically, our years have nothing to do with the Bible at all.
Yeah.
But just coincidentally, the Lord always speaks for these New Year's prophecies on the Gregorian calendar that we're under now, which is
I always find
interesting.
Interesting thing is he's never been right. I mean, he's got as good of a track record as Jack Van Impe, but this year in January, he prophesied that, speaking of the hurricane season, he said that this year that God had spoken to him and told him that the coasts of America would be ravaged by hurricanes this year.
Are you talking about Pat Robertson or Al Gore?
Well, we could almost say the same. I think they were both disappointed that it didn't happen, maybe. But
they're all on a religious paradigm somewhere along the line.
Oh, there's something there that sounds a little bit alike, does it there?
Yep.
But no, that was his January prophecy, New Year's prophecy. He always goes into prayer on New Year's Eve and comes out with a prophecy for the world. And speaking of the hurricane season this year, he said God spoke to him and told him that the coast lines of America would be ravaged this year by this hurricane season was the reference that he was making. And, you know, the only hurricane that hit the coast this year was a storm that formed just off of the coast here at Houston. And was just a tropical depression and then stayed out in the water a little too long and became a Category 1 before it hit land more over toward Louisiana. But as far as I know, that was the only storm to hit the coast this year. And we're getting a little bit late in the season now.
Well, you know, it's possible. But, you know, it's amazing, Michael, that very, very rarely, unless some sort of proclamation by one of the evangelical ministers or one of their behaviors just is so completely outrageously hypocritical. Very rarely are these guys held to account. I mean, if we don't speak up about what Pat Robertson has predicted, you're never going to hear about it unless he says something like the wrath of God is going to come upon the United States for suggesting that the Israelis and the Palestinians live in peace. By the way, as far as I can read the Bible, even if that were true, that God had given that land to the Jewish people, we could do a whole seminar about that one. But even if that were true, God also instructs those that have possession of the land to be good to their neighbors and to be good and kind to the strangers. If it is the Jewish people's land, God in the Bible gives the Jewish people and by extension everybody the permission to be kind and generous and be blessed are the peacemakers, Jesus said. But how come they seem to want to just completely ignore those passages regardless of their validity or not as far as we're concerned and just focus on the thing that will gin up the most controversy and the most division, and the most disunity, and the most, as you said, ability to raise money.
Oh, and I know, and speaking, Glenn, as you said, that no one holds them accountable, I begged people, as we went into the year 2000, I started back in 1988, with 88 Reasons Why Jesus is Coming Back in 88, I stood up and voiced definitely that it was not going to happen, and the only thing that I asked was that, you know, if I'm wrong, hold me accountable. If they're wrong, please hold them accountable. And then year 2000 was coming around, and I boldly proclaimed that nothing was going to happen out of the ordinary with the change of the year. The computers were not going to crash, and Robertson and other doomsdayers, of course, And I begged people. I said, the only thing I ask, I'm willing to stick my neck out here and tell you this is not true. It is not going to happen. I'm not even saying I don't believe it's going to happen. I'm telling you it is not going to happen, and hold me accountable, but then also hold those accountable who have said such alarming things and tried to scare the whole world to death. And I don't really know that I got any credit for being right, but no one held Robertson or all of the rest of the doomsdayers accountable. They just did not hold them accountable at all, which is the norm, which just shows me a great disturbing ability to control people, even their own thinking, even in the face of being absolutely dead wrong.
It's amazing. I remember the 88 reasons why Jesus was going to come back in 1988, and even while still entrenched in the evangelical Christian and Messianic Jewish circles, even we thought, you know, this is a little off. But yet, millions of those booklets were sold.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody was a little cautious, but there was a lot of people who read that. I certainly read it. And I just remember thinking to myself, this guy made a whole lot of money. And then I remember in 1989, of course, after Jesus did not come back in 1988, I was in a hospital waiting room, Michael, and I looked down at the little end table in the hospital waiting room, and as God is my witness, there was a book by the same God, yeah, that's exactly right, by the same guy that said 89 reasons why Jesus Christ is coming back in 1989. And it was by the same guy, and he explained why he was just 1 year off.
Yep.
And I could not believe, I thought I was like watching a Saturday Night Live skit or something.
Yeah.
But there it was. And you know he made money on that. And nobody ever asked for their money back from Hal Lindsey or from the aforementioned Jack Van Impe or from Terry Stone or from Pat Robertson, or from John Hagee, or from the guy who I don't even know what his name was who wrote 88 Reasons Why. Nobody ever asked their money back from them, and they are not held to account. And if they were held to the same account of the Old Testament, they would have been stoned to death a long time ago, because according to the criteria of the Bible, they are false prophets.
Absolutely.
And if they were not covered by the grace of God and by the peace of God, they should be stoned to death.
Yes, and you know, the thing of it is, and they have never been right one single time. It's just amazing that these ministries thrive, and they're never, ever, ever right. I've been right every time. I have been right every time. And I don't make money from being right. And I told them, this isn't going to happen.
Well, that's not a good confession, Michael. We don't want to. In the past, you haven't made money.
Well, being right just is not all it was cracked up to be, you know?
Just ask Jesus about how that paid off for him. Well, we got lots of questions. We've got about half an hour left on the Glenn Klein Online webcast. And we encourage you to write Michael and moi with your questions and comments at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, webcast@gospelrevolution.com. This first one, Michael, quite a lengthy one. This comes from a fellow named Alexander Winslow, who talks about, in his email, the betrayal of Jesus by Judas Iscariot. And he says at the bottom, I think this is a very interesting point. He says, it's interesting to consider here that if Jesus had not been betrayed and executed, the human race would still be under the, quote, curse of death without the hope of an earthly resurrection. So it is the act of betrayal which is condemned by most of Christianity that was the instrument that allowed the sword of death to be plowed into plowshares, which caused the peace of God to be bestowed upon the earth. And then he quotes 2 Corinthians 5:14, which states that one man, Christ, died for all. And then in quotes he says, it does not say except for Judas Iscariot. And I think that's a point well taken. That obviously, I mean, Judas is like the ultimate betrayer. And if Judas was forgiven and Judas was redeemed through the sacrifice of Christ and the resurrection and the blood, who else could not be? You know, I mean, what's the worst thing that a person could possibly be accused of doing? Would that be to betray to his face with a kiss?
Well,
Jesus of Nazareth. And yet we believe that Judas was forgiven just like everybody else, right?
And deny. I mean, the great apostle Peter denied him three times, you know, and told Jesus, "Oh no, never ever will I ever do that." So, you know, it's to apply something different for Judas than we did for Peter. Peter did not repent for what he had done. They didn't ask Jesus forgiveness. At least it's not recorded. Jesus didn't require him to ask him forgiveness. He did not. We know the record of Thomas standing there telling the disciples and the dude they had brought with him, trying to say, "This is him raised from the dead." And Thomas said, "I don't believe and I won't believe." And Jesus didn't say, "Well, you know, unless you believe, you're going to burn in hell." He said, "You know, unless I thrust my hand in his side and put my hands in his the holes in his hands, I will not believe." And Jesus said, "Here, stick your hand in here in my side." And then he said, "My Lord and my God." There was no repentance and confession and all of this. So yeah, to put Judas, you know, off in a place separate from our great apostles is really quite ridiculous.
And that's another thing that the church, of course, has been guilty of throughout the ages, is that they categorize what they call sin. Somehow, Judas, who betrayed Jesus at the Garden of Gethsemane, somehow is linked differently from Peter, who denied Jesus at the cross. How did one, I wonder, get to be considered the ultimate traitor, and the other one get to be considered the first pope?
Yes. Amazing, isn't it? Well, it's just that that's where that the construing the message of the gospel and the fulfillment of prophecy and what the prophets foretold would happen. I mean, you've got to start saying, "Well, this is this, and that's that, and this is this, and that's that." Well, you see, when you understand the gospel, you don't have to go around mincing words. You know, and Paul said that because we have such hope, we speak with great confidence. And we don't have to try to figure out who made it, who didn't. All we have to do is figure out, were the prophets correct? Did Jesus come to redeem the world? And then make a decision as far as our own beliefs are concerned. Do we believe he succeeded or do we believe he failed? And I know that I believe, and I also know that you believe, that Jesus succeeded. And if he did, then Judas holds no different place in heaven than the other apostles.
Exactly. And that, getting back to Pat Robertson's contention that the wrath of God may come on the United States for some behavior we may or may not manifest in the country, just goes to show that he doesn't believe that Jesus did what he said he did, which was take on the entire and utter total wrath of God. If Jesus Christ, Michael, took on all of God's wrath, then God has no more wrath to pour out. Even if we strategically or our foreign policy was flawed in siding with a Palestinian state and trying to have Israel work out their disagreements and their troubles with their Arab neighbors, even if that was a wrong-headed policy, that still would have absolutely nothing to do with the wrath of God, if it were indeed all poured out on Jesus Christ. We believe that Jesus literally is Lord, that he paid the entire price, and therefore, Michael, he also gets all the praise and all the glory. We get to share none of it because of that.
Absolutely. And the thing of it is, to believe that God's wrath still exists today is to not believe that Jesus Christ is Lord. Beginning and end of comment. Pat Robert, let me say it just as clearly as I know how to say it. Pat Robertson, you do not believe that Jesus Christ is Lord. Stop faking it.
I was just talking to a friend of mine today in Wisconsin, and he's still been attending, actually the church that we used to attend in Wisconsin and that we were a part of, and that you spoke at many moons ago. And I said to him, I said, you really don't believe that people are going to hell. Because if you did, how could you just have like a normal day? How could you do, I'm doing some business with him actually. I said, how could we just like be doing business? Mm. He's a big Packers fan. I said, how could you enjoy watching a Green Bay Packers football game while the vast majority of people that are watching the game and that are resident in your town are going to hell?
And the Green Bay Packers you're watching are going to hell.
Exactly.
And we're cheering them on as they march toward hell.
Onward, Christian soldiers, going straight to hell. Exactly. I mean, people say they believe in Michael, and they embrace it, and they invest in it, and obviously men like Pat Robertson, and we're picking on Pat tonight, but I mean, you could name 500.
Pat tonight.
Yes, it's, people make their living on this, but people really, really do not believe it, because you know what somebody believes by not what they say, by what they do.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and I used to believe that, and that's the reason I spend at least 8 hours a day out witnessing every day. You know, our good friend Steve Etherie in southern Illinois there, you know, became absolutely overwhelmed after he realized he had only won about 800 of the youth in southern Illinois, realizing he had gotten less than 10% of them, and found it totally unacceptable that 80 to 90% of the kids in southern Illinois were going to hell, and he was just an everyday Joe, and as he says, so eloquently, he said, and the guys that are being paid to win them to the Lord are out on the golf course.
Exactly.
And so he kind of withdrew to find out, you know, why, how can we win more? And he was lamenting about this at his wife's beauty shop when our friend Kim of Kim and Jared, who are have become champions of grace and have joined with us in the Champions of Grace, and also Steve, she was in the beauty shop, and he was lamenting about all these people going to hell, and she just made one comment. She says, well, have you ever thought about the fact that maybe that what Jesus did at the cross redeemed all of those, the rest of the 80 to 90% of the ones you missed? And he set out to prove her wrong, and 4 months later came up for air and said, I give up. It's true. It's true. It's true.
It's true. It's true.
It's true.
you know what that quote, what movie that's from?
No, I don't. Sounds like Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, but it was Blazing Saddles, the Mel Brooks movie.
Okay.
With, you know what, somebody will email me at webcast@gospelrevolution.com because I cannot think of the actress's name or the actor's name that was involved in that. It was, you folks know, somebody will write, what was that guy? It was a black actor. Madeline Kahn was the actress, and I can't, boy. Anyway, she gets into a compromising position, a romantic situation with this guy who's playing a black sheriff in this Mel Brooks movie. And all of a sudden, the lights go down, and you hear the zipper go down, and you all of a sudden you hear her, and she's got a speech impediment, and she says, it's true, it's true. What was the guy's name? Somebody email me. Somebody, I can see him, I can see the movie. One of the, if you guys want a laugh this weekend, rent Blazing Saddles by Mel Brooks, one of the classic Western comedies of all time, if not the only Western comedy of all time. Speaking, Michael, of ministers being on the golf course, Did you know that Oral Roberts University President Richard Roberts today asked the school board of Regents for a leave of absence after accusations of lavish spending at donors' expense and illegal involvement in a political campaign? Today, Roberts, who is 58, said he would continue in his role as chairman and chief executive of Oral Roberts Ministry. So you got to get out of the university, but you're okay in the ministry still.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't know how long this leave of absence will last, but I fully trust the members of the Board of Regents, Roberts said in a statement released by the university. I pray and believe that in God's timing, and when the board feels that it is appropriate, I will be back at my post as president. I found that interesting that it was at God's timing and when the board feels that it is appropriate. Apparently, Richard Tricky Dick Roberts got caught with his hand in the cookie jar one more time, Michael. And as Queen sang many moons ago, another one bites the dust.
Yes, and it keeps happening. Bless their heart, you know. It's like carnage. It's just like carnage. It's just amazing. But I think it's all part of what, you know, must take place, you know, to see the end of this. And, you know, as I've told people for years, you know, we're not sharing this gospel to rearrange the apples on the tree. We're sharing this gospel to lay the axe to the root of this bedeviled religious system, you know, that has replaced the gospel with a structure so that men can exalt each other and addict the rest to manipulation and control. And I make no apologies for being a part of a voice that is ready to see it come down, to see it come crashing down, and all of these things are just part of it. I don't relish and revel at all in the pain or the exposure that any of these guys go through, but you know what? It's just part of the collapse that's taking place, and it will continue. That I promise you.
Yeah, I mean, once again, you're right, Michael, and I think somebody should give you credit and pay you some money
once again
for being so prophetic.
It just gets
once
boring
again.
Being right, though. I mean, you know, it's just...
Listen, these guys and this perversion has not replaced the gospel. It's just a perversion of the gospel. It's no gospel at all. In fact, Paul said that anybody that preach any other gospel other than the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace should be cursed.
Yep.
And however you would define a curse, this would seem to indicate
well,
that.
Certainly Paul's desire, anyway. I understand the frustration.
Yeah, I don't mind these guys. And by our own witness, Michael, as when we were back in the day in the ministry behind the scenes, I mean, by our own observance, these guys, many of them know exactly what they're doing. They have no qualms at all about it.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I remember being in the back rooms with some of these guys, and you know, they're very, very blatant about you know, the joy of control. You know, there just was no bones about it, and the money issues, and it's, you know, pretty sad. But thank God the gospel is here. And it is moving around the earth, and even as Pastor John says, and I believe it, we've been given a dispensation of grace to now carry this message out and unify those who have given their lives to spread this gospel. I think it's an awesome thing.
You're not getting. You're not. You guys aren't becoming dispensationalists now. I mean, are you? I mean, last week you're baptizing people, you're starting, you know, ministerial license, and now you're becoming dispensationalist on me?
No, not exactly, but I just believe that a dispensation. Yeah, there is a manifestation that, you know, and those things happen at different spaces and places of time, and you know, it's quite unique, you know, to see this happening. And it's just like full circle, I guess, you know. and things have come full circle, and things are really, really coming together. We're really happy about it.
The guy's name was Cleavon Little in the movie Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, and
the black guy.
Word of knowledge?
No, I just looked it up on the internet.
Okay.
That was the one that Madeline Kahn reached into his pants and said, it's cool, it's cool. What it's cool about, ladies and gentlemen, we'll let just you figure that one out. Because we're all adults here listening on the webcast. We've got a few more questions. Mike, we got an email last week from a lovely woman in Canada who did not want to talk or to write specifically about her issue online, but she asked that we call her. So I talked to her earlier this week, and she's a precious elderly woman from Canada, and it's spent literally hundreds of hours listening to your tapes and your CDs and the webcast, and she still was tormented by what she felt was a demonic spirit, and or that could possibly have been a demonic spirit that would just cause her to have complete anger towards God, to want to curse God. And I really had a nice conversation with her, and I really felt the lifting of her heart when I reminded her, and the reason I bring this up, ladies and gentlemen, is that regardless of what you think you're facing or what you are facing, Michael, God can handle us being angry with him if that's what's manifesting in our heart at the time. He can handle us cursing him. And no matter what we do or think about God or think about other human beings, it doesn't change God's view of us. And that's what I reminded this wonderful listener of ours, and it seemed to lift her heart a bit.
Yes, you know, it's funny that you bring that one up. I yesterday was thinking about the times when I have become so frustrated that I went through that whole thing of ranting and raving and cursing God and the whole thing. And just in my mind's eye, I just saw this image of God, if you will, standing next to this little tiny figure, just like a little, you know, a little ant on the floor, just pitching a fit and just standing there smiling, you know. It was just the image that I got in my mind, and it really struck me kind of funny that we would think that we would impress God with our cursing, you know. I remember dear friend Rick Davis. He's a three-time world heavyweight champion kickboxer and a gospel revolutionary also. And he had been kind of popular for, you know, singing and stuff in the churches, and they didn't know that he had changed his mind about some things. And there was this little Methodist church out in the country that asked him to come and share with them and sing. And he told me, he said, Mike, I can't keep my mouth shut. He said, I shouldn't be going to these places because I say things that they don't agree with. And he said, told me he decided to accept the invitation, thought, I'll just sing, you know, it'll be a blessing for me and them, and we'll sing about Jesus. So he got through one of his songs, and of course Rick can't keep his mouth shut at all, and as most of our gospel revolutionaries can't. He stopped in the middle, stopped at the end of his song. He says, you know, have you ever just felt like the heavens were brass and that God wasn't hearing you at all, and just that God was a million miles away? And he said, all those little Methodists shook their head, yes. And he said, that's funny. It never happens to me. And so, of course, he already had their ire up, and then he said, I tell you what. He said, the next time that you feel like the heavens are brass and God's not listening to you, just haul off and cuss him out. Just think of every foul, vile word you can think of and just cuss God out. He said, one gentleman got so upset, he stood up and said, how dare you? We would never curse God. And he said, why? He says, you afraid he'll hear you? And then he told me, you know, there's something wrong when we're absolutely convinced that if we curse, God hears us. But if we pray, we're not sure he ever hears us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Good stuff. That's a gospel revolutionary there.
That's a gospel revelation revolutionary. That's
yeah.
Awesome. Well, we just got an email from our pastor, John Adair, there at the beautiful Freedom Worship Center.
Yeah, he's just trying to call me on my cell phone. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he just said he just logged in. He said, could we please start over? He just got in late.
See, and we talked about him. Half of this whole thing, we talked about him. And, oh, my gosh, did I have some things to share about John Adair. Oh, dear Jesus. This isn't recorded, is it?
Yes, and it will be on the archive within the next 24 hours or so. So, John, you can catch up with the rest of the beautiful humans. We got a great email from Bruce Gosey, our good friend out there in Kentucky. And it's a long, interesting article I'm going to forward to you, Michael. It's about America's Armageddonites. And I'm going to read that article. Thanks, Bruce, and we'll be commenting on that. And here is an email from, this is Deborah. Let's see if we can quickly get to this. It's a little long, but bear with us. She says, hello, Mike. I hope you'll be able to answer this question tonight. If not, maybe next week. Anyway, here it goes. I'm on a forum that caters to those of us who believe in the reconciliation of all men. Praise the Lord for that. But a controversy is brewing over 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Most say we have to throw people out of the church who don't adhere to the criteria of righteousness. In other words, fornicators, gays, and people unfaithful to their wives are to be put out of the church. And I and another fellow see it your way, that we are all forgiven and loved, and no one should be thrown out, or we will all have to be thrown out. One man is angry because his gay brother-in-law left his sister for his lover. Yes, this is a terrible thing, and I truly feel sorry for this poor woman. It's too bad the man felt like he couldn't be real with his sexuality and had to hide it from the world. I'm sorry she had to suffer for his shame. By the way, I'm just going to add as an amended comment there, that's got a lot more to do with his shame than the shame of the church and our society. Anyway, Mike, how do we resolve the issue with clear biblical commands rebuking those who do these things from 1 Corinthians 5, verse 9? I wrote you a letter... that letter, not to associate with sexually immoral people, have nothing whatever to do with the immoral of this world or the avaricious and grasping or the idolatrous, for then you must get out of the world altogether. So I write you now that if a pretend brother is immoral or greedy or idolatrous or abusive, a drinker or robber, you must not associate with him, not even eat with one of those types. I have trouble understanding why we shouldn't take this literally, although I realize if we do, we are under the law again. Can you help me, Mike? Deborah.
Oh, of course. Remember, that is 1 Corinthians. And guess what comes after 1 Corinthians?
Could it be 2 Corinthians?
It is 2 Corinthians. you know, and the thing of it is that you've got to realize this is biblical, but it's not scriptural. And those of you who have been listening to the teaching for some time understand exactly what we're saying. I'm not going to try to delay, but maybe those who have not heard that comment before, what's your interest a bit? It is biblical, but it is not scriptural.
Yeah, they can go back and listen to the archive webcast if they want to know exactly specifically what you mean there.
Yes, that and series of tapes and CDs and all that. But the interesting thing is if you go then and read 2 Corinthians, the very same Paul who said and was talking specifically about a man who was having sex with his stepmother, and but that is the one in particular that Paul said to disassociate from and not, you know, shun him. That's where shunning comes from, is these verses. And we don't know the communication that took place, as John said the other day, from the Corinthians to Paul about that, but we do know Paul's next letter to the Corinthians, and he was, something happened to him. It's like he got a different brain or something. Because in that letter of 2 Corinthians, he was rebuking them for treating the man the way he told them to. and told them that they were being harsh and they were being cruel and that they should treat him like a brother and not as an enemy, when he literally was the same guy who said treat him like an enemy before. So I think that it's quite a simple thing. All you see is growing in grace. Can we say growing in grace?
What do you mean by that, growing? What do you mean, Michael, when you say growing in grace?
Well, growing in grace, as Paul was very persuaded. I mean, Paul knew about the grace of God, but it takes a while to filter all of our prejudice and our social dysfunction, our moralities, and our judgments that have to filter through the grace of God, and the grace of God has to filter through those things. And as that grace begins to confront our own bigotries, and that grace begins to confront those things, we'll have a change of mind. We'll have a change of heart. I've had people over the years who, and I could talk about even recently those who have said that they, you know, have been transformed by hearing the message of the gospel either on tape or the website, but then totally disassociated with me because they found out that I was gay. And you wouldn't believe how many have been and are in the process of having a complete growth in the grace of God. Because that's what grace does,
Michael.
It will do it of its own accord, and it will take all of our prejudices, and as we allow it to take place, and it will challenge us to the core. And even someone who would be, stand in a judgment of a person like myself, and I've watched them come around one after the other. Because the grace of God just does that to the heart. That's growing in grace.
You're gay?
I think that's what somebody told me.
Well, I want to make sure that you have no problem with me because I'm straight.
Well, heterosexuality gets pretty gross sometimes, but I think I can accept it.
Because, I don't know how I want to offend. Unbelievable. It's craziness. It's insanity. It's insanity, ladies and gentlemen. But you know what? We've said it before. We do not know anything, any philosophy, any perspective that leads to more insane behavior and perspective than evangelicalism and legalism and religiosity. Michael, we got a few more questions. There's some great ones. We're going to go over time tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We really appreciate you participating. And we've got some deep stuff tonight. This comes from Paul in the United Kingdom. He says, "Hey, Glenn, is Mike Williams the first person since the Apostle Paul to teach the true gospel of grace and peace? Or do you know of others before Mike who taught it? Thanks, Paul from the United Kingdom." Well, Michael, since this question was addressed to me,
it's your question, not mine.
It's my question. No, Michael is the only person that I have known to teach the gospel of grace and peace since the Apostle Paul. In fact, he teaches it better than the Apostle Paul. So there you go, Paul. The guy's name is Paul, too. Yeah, that's my opinion. I have never heard anybody teach the gospel of grace and peace before Michael Williams. There have been people that have copied it since then. God, thank God. I'm one of them. I'm one of them that have copied it, that have made it my own, that have articulated it in a unique and different way, because obviously we all perceive and hear things in a different way. But yes, Michael Williams is the first person since the Apostle Paul to teach the true gospel, and he teaches it even better than the Apostle Paul, because, Michael, you have the benefit of the Apostle Paul's teaching and the last 2,000 years of history. I mean, I have no problem saying that whatsoever. We know more than the apostles knew. We didn't see as much as the apostles who saw Christ in person, but we certainly have more historical context. We know what they ended up writing. We ended up knowing what disagreements and arguments that those guys ended up having.
And at least we didn't start out in our walk sacrificing animals. So, yeah.
Well, some of us did. And thank
but
God
now,
for
you
that.
Know, and of course, I don't know, I'm, to what degree the understanding the gospel has ever been preached. It would be far from me to ever do that. I know that I would have loved to have had somebody to preach to me the gospel, and the only phase of it that I got to walk out and sit and listen to somebody else. I mean, I've had the privilege of talking it through with a lot of people, but there was one teacher, Jim Richards, actually, who at one time was a very strong colleague, but I learned a lot about the subject of righteousness from Jim. And I'll be forever grateful for that, that I learned to such a degree from him. The message of righteousness, and and then of course over the years a lot of conversations and bantering things back and forth, but I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful. I don't know why, but I am. Nobody who's heard it has been more affected or blessed by it than myself. So
well, and Michael, you know as well as I do. And this is all humility aside, this is just the fact, folks, is that there are people picking up on this all over the world, some of which have gotten more press than you have for whatever reason. And I was just reading about a conference coming up soon. Tim Pruitt, our webmaster, sent me a copy of it. Literally, this is purportedly a conference on the gospel of grace and peace, and this guy is calling for, literally, I couldn't believe what I was reading, but I did believe it, a gospel revolution. It said it right on there. And I was thinking to myself, would somebody give somebody some credit? Please.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. I mean, it's I don't go around bemoaning needing credit.
I know, you don't care at all. You just want the best message out there. But it pisses me off, okay? I'm entitled. You're my friend. I love you. It pisses me off. That's it.
Well, see, when I have you to do it for me, I don't have to be concerned about it.
All right, fair enough.
So, the gospel revolution is a wonderful statement. I remember, dear Lord, it's been 20 years ago at least that I was explaining to people that we don't need a revival, because a revival means to revive that which is dead or dying, and that which is dead or dying needs to go ahead and die. And we begin to call for a revolution of thought and understanding of this incredible gospel long before I even realized how revolutionary it actually was.
That's awesome stuff. And, I all kidding aside, ladies and gentlemen, lives are being impacted in a major way through your contributions and your efforts and your participation. Just you calling the show, you emailing the show. Here, remember several weeks ago, Michael, we got a call from a gentleman on the West Coast named Ron, who was talking about him being tormented with suicidal thoughts. Well, tonight we heard from Ron, and thank God for that, first of all.
Yeah,
and he says, Glenn, thanks so much for what you do. Your kindness and love come through even in your light banter with Michael. He said, I heard of a possible med I could try on your show to deal with the ever-present thoughts of taking my life on Wednesday's webcast. Please pass that information along to me, which we will do, Ron, of course. He wants to know again, rhetorically, he says, are we free to kill ourselves? This last few days, the seduction of taking the ultimate trip, stepping into the unknown, the adventure with the promise of treasure, it is the unknown, but I'm told it is paradise. I have 5 children and 7 grandchildren. They have had to live with the knowledge of suicide running in our family. I would rather stay here to an old age, reach paradise, to find I could have enjoyed it even sooner had I opted out, to keep my offspring from the knowledge of losing a father to suicide. I hope you understand that. It is kind of jumbled. Ron, we absolutely understand that. That is
totally
awesome stuff. Did you get that, Michael?
It is the power of the gospel in action. And you see, freedom is just that powerful. That's the reason that, even though we had great concern for Ron, we didn't have any concern at all about sharing freedom with Ron.
Exactly.
And, you know, I remember the very first time that I opened my mouth in somewhere up north. It may have been actually in Wisconsin. And I remember so very clearly my heart being filled to overflowing to address the subject of suicide. And, of course, we were raised in a movement, in the Word of Faith movement, and Baptists, and, you know, everything I'd ever been in said that people that committed suicide went to hell, you know. And I finally took the bold step, and I professed the fact that, you know, that's just not possible. I wasn't even at the point of the redemption of the world at the time. And I never will forget the response that evening, whether arranged by God or incidental is irrelevant to me, but it was quite amazing that I spoke with three people after that meeting, two of which had been contemplating suicide, and both of them said that they had the strangest experience that when I openly proclaimed that suicide would not, could not send them to hell, anyone to hell, and of course I was addressing just believers at that time, and but assured them that that the failure in their life of suicide could not alienate or separate them from God, and I went into some detail, and both of them, Glenn, both of them, I'm not saying that this happens every time, and maybe it was just for me or whatever, but both of them told me that they had had almost lifelong, the other lifelong, plagued with the thoughts of suicide, and they said they could tell that the moment that I gave that freedom was announced from the podium that I was speaking from, that the obsession with the thoughts of suicide just left. We didn't cast anything out. We just set their minds free from this rule. And the other one, of course, was a lady who had a family member. I don't remember which one it would have been, but had a family member that committed suicide and came weeping and just so grateful to be relieved from the thought that their precious loved one was burning in hell, who had, you know, loved God, you know, and but, you know, because of who knows what, you know. And let me tell you something, folks, if you've never been at that door where that death seems to be the only option, one thing you don't want to do is ever judge someone who's gone there.
Exactly.
Until you've known that dark place, you just don't know. You don't know. I have been at that dark place, and only God knows what kept me from there. I actually attempted suicide 3 times, and but I tell you what, until you know that type of darkness, there's just no room to judge. It's just no room to
judge. And that's always good advice about anything. Judge not.
Absolutely.
Lest you be judged. Ron continues, Michael, in his email, and he says, some of the things that give me hope is knowing that God is aware of my every move and that I believe he works all things for good. He said, Mike, you are the greatest teacher I have ever heard. He says, I love you, Glenn and Mike. And Ron, I know that I had the email because I didn't want to give the medication over the webcast. I think I still have it in my files, but if I don't email you back in the next day or so, feel free to give me a call on my phone number on the website, which is 813-363-9545, and I will get that information for you one way or the other. But we are certainly very thrilled to finish this webcast, Michael, knowing that Ron is still amongst us.
Yeah.
And John Adair is just thrilled to hear his comments. Because remember, Michael, John called in after Ron did a couple of weeks ago, and he said, my heart is totally blessed, Ron. And so glad to hear that our lives are filled greater and greater when we consider to serve each other. Isn't that the heart of God? And that's really what Ron was saying. He was putting aside his own personal inclination for his children, lest he might be wrong. unless his kids might be negatively affected by the fact that somebody would commit suicide.
Freedom puts you in that mindset where the things turn from your own situation to those around you. And Ron, you got to get in contact with John. We need you as a champion of grace. You truly are, dear brother, a champion of grace already.
Exactly. So one way or another, Ron, get in touch with us. And like I said, I will try to get you that medication information that hopefully is still in my files. And we still have emails that we're going to get to next week from Greg Ambergy in Ohio. Bruce, we're going to get to comment on your stuff next week. And John writing us from New Jersey tonight. We're over time as it is. And we really appreciate everybody's patience and your participation. And pretty soon, Michael, you will be in Canada.
I will be in
Wisconsin.
Absolutely.
Very excited. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to the gospelrevolution.com website for all the information about Michael's meetings in Calgary and in central Wisconsin coming up next month. And feel free at all times to get information about inviting Michael to your area. You just need to go to the website and click on Invite Mike for more information. And Michael, I'm hoping, I won't say praying, but that I will be back in the sunny climes of Florida next week in studio. But if not, be happy to do it on the phone line. And this is a good show.
It's a good show.
Thanks for your time, brother.
It's a good show, ladies and gentlemen.
From another mother?
Yes.
We will talk to you in 7 days, ladies and gentlemen. Let us hear from you at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Want to thank Patrick L. Jones for producing and engineering this webcast back at our home studio in beautiful Tampa, Florida. And thanks for everybody for participating at every level of the Gospel Revolution. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody.